longer, at least till 6.
Tonight?
Yeah. It's 5:30 now, Mike. It's... $1,800. Try to go for another half an hour. Staff and the committee chair have identified some motions that the committee worked on that we think would be helpful. Recall when we had the discussion after lunch today, we talked about what we should do in the interim between now and the GARM, and working on sector policy development or management was one of the things that seemed to keep popping up. So we're going to bring forward a few motions, I think, that the committee dealt with and see how the council feels about that. Because I think it would be helpful if the industry knew where the council was leaning anyways on those issues as they go home tonight and digest where we are with groundfish. Rip?
On top of that, these are wicked easy.
Wicked.
Okay, we're going to try this one. On the handout that you got today was handout number 12, which were the motions from the Groundfish Oversight Committee meeting of June 2nd. It's motion number 4. Again, this was a committee motion. So on behalf of the committee, that sectors will be jointly liable only for the following violations of sector policy: ACE overages, discarding of legal fish, and misreporting of catch, parentheses, landings or discards.
Committee motion, no second required. Tom?
It's 5:30 and we're halfway to paradise, so here we go. This one is an issue that has actually been a little bit of a problem for the folks who are organizing sectors. The current regulations, and I may be paraphrasing a little bit, but the current regulations basically say that if you join a sector, you're liable for any violation of federal regulations or something like that. That may not be the exact language. It may say federal fisheries regulations. But anyway, this is this is identified as a problem for people organizing sectors because the sector members, while they're willing to be liable for sector-related provisions, they don't feel like they should be individually liable for or jointly liable, whatever the legal term is, for some violations that are really individual actions. For example, an action like going inside a closed area or, using a wrong mesh or something like that. And so a suggestion that came out of there's more discussion of this in our advisory panel, Groundfish Advisory Panel meeting summary, but I'm not going to go into it. They point out that in Amendment 13, the language seems to say that a sector can be subject to legal action, to NIMS enforcement action for violations of the regulations pertaining to sectors. So what this is an attempt to do is to try and narrow the focus and make it clear that if you're in a sector, you're liable for things like ACE overages, discarding of legal fish, misreporting of catch. But, you know, if some guy doesn't paint his numbers on his hull right, you're not necessarily liable for that type of violation, or if he goes in a closed area. It's to try and narrow the pool. It's not only been an issue, it's apparently been an issue in some cases with the mortgage holders of boats that want to join sectors, where the banks are starting to raise a concern about being liable for any violation that somebody might do.
Thanks for the background, Tom. Any discussion from the council? Questions? Anybody? Gene?
Well, as I stated at the committee meeting, I think this is a problematic motion at this point. It's hard to anticipate what particular sector conditions and requirements might come into being in a particular operations plan. And just to assume that these are the only three measures that should be subject to joint and several liability, I think, is premature. I understand the concern of the committee in suggesting something along these lines, but I think, I reserve my legal advice on the approvability of such a specific, fairly narrowly defined description of those measures that will be subject to joint and several liability. So, with that caveat, I wanted to make the council aware of that caveat.
George.
This would be just for inclusion as one option in this document, right? So that the status quo option would be what currently exists in the regulations, which they would be severally liable for everything. Is that correct?
That's my understanding from the committee chair.
Could I ask one question of Gene?
Please.
Would it be possible to have, rather than a suite of specific exemptions, so to speak, from this in this amendment, but to have in the operations plan the option to specify what would and wouldn't be severally liable for that sector and that fishery, so that we could consider the specific context?
Well, we have that to some degree now. The problem is the way the regs are drafted today. Not only the joint and several liability potentially applies to actual conditions in the operations plan, as well as other applicable federal regulations. So it's sort of has two levels here: the specifically defined operation guide restrictions and conditions, as well as other federal regulations, like the example given. If you violate a net restriction. Or some other regulation in another fishery, like lobsters, for example, that is not particularly pertinent to a particular sector, are all the sector members subject to joint and several liability? I mean, I think that it can be worked out in an operations plan as to what specific conditions and or federal regulations subject the entire sector to joint and several liability. Just to follow up on my earlier comment, under the current regs, there is a provision that says sector members are not subject to administrative type measures or measures that are only applicable to the sort of inner workings of the sector itself, and that the sector will identify, and if agreed to by the agency, will not be subject to those conditions and restrictions that are not relevant to federal enforcement concerns. And so that provision is currently in the regs, that where we pre-identify those measures that are not subject to joint and several liability. So perhaps a consideration of another alternative along those lines, where the operations plan will designate, and if agreed to by the agency, those measures that are not subject to joint and several liability. Now, I understand that leaves some uncertainty in the process, in that if potential sector members sign up without knowing exactly what is going to be agreed to at the end of the process, they may want to rescind their agreement to join the sector. So, perhaps that's not a perfect compromise from the sector's point of view.
Gene says yes. That was a yes?
Well, it's yes. There could be an alternative that it's agreed to, or it's part of the operations plan and the approval of the operations plan, to identify what's subject to joint and several liability. And that's probably not a specific alternative right now.
We're on the council. Go to the audience. Jeff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff Pike, speaking on behalf of the fixed gear and hook sectors. I agree with Gene. This has not been an issue for the two existing sectors so far. And I think the purpose of the joint and several liability was really to make sure that members of the sector enforced their rules amongst themselves so that, in fact, everybody would be playing according to the rules. And I, just looking at those three, I was thinking, for example, what about conspiracy where members of the sector transferred fish to other boats, other sectors, or things of that nature? I mean, there could be a lot of other circumstances where joint liability would be appropriate. And perhaps we're putting too much faith into the enforcement regime, but I think at least for the existing sectors, this has not been an issue either with the lenders or the members. I mean, I think you could see pretty clearly if you've identified an offense that it is really a bad one. And ultimately, this doesn't even address the issue of the sector being shut down, which is, of course, the most the harshest penalty, because then they can't go into the common pool and they have to tie up for the rest of the year. So whether or not they're jointly liable, this doesn't even get to the issue of the regional director at their discretion pulling the plug on the sector and saying, you know, you guys have acted in a way that you exceeded your tack in some manner. So I would tend to agree with and support Gene's comments, and it may be premature at this point, and that certainly when we formed our sectors and the men signed the contracts to join the sector, it was subject to being, and the operations plan, it was subject to being approved by NIMFS. And if NIMFS changed the rules, they were allowed to pull out of the sector. That is to say, if NIMFS disapproved what we have proposed because they wanted some other things in there in the document, that member who said, well, I didn't agree to that, had the right to withdraw. So I think it can be dealt with in an operations plan, and I just wanted to provide that to you. Thank you.
Anyone else? Maggie?
Thank you. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. Just wanted to point out, if it hadn't already been done so, that this was a recommendation of the advisory panel. It's probably this issue of joint liability within the industry is probably presented the biggest concern about sector membership. We did also talk about some of the, you know, the more egregious kind of violations that people were concerned about, things like closed area violations or mesh violations. But ultimately, I think we decided to phrase it in a more, you know, instead of saying you wouldn't be subject to those, it's say that you would be subject to these types of violations only, which essentially are fraud. And, you know, I mean, I would disagree with Jeff that the issue of transferring fish between boats isn't covered there. That, in my mind, that's covered by misreporting. That's some misreporting if you acted in that way. I would be very uncomfortable with leaving it up to just a request in the operations plan, because, again, what's the guidance on it? What is the council's guidance on that to the agency? The agency can just say, no, we're not going to remove your liability for these egregious kind of violations. So I would urge you to support this motion. Again, it's one option. The status quo is still there. Perhaps the advisory panel can work on it a little more to try to perfect it and make, you know, if directed to do so. But I think this is an important issue that should be resolved. Thank you.
Vito.
Yeah, Vito Gigaloni, Northeast Seafood Coalition. We would also like to support this motion. The council's heard quite a bit of testimony about the concerns that sector advocates and people that are considering sectors, that the joint and several liability and the lack of detail in that is a real concern. So even if the council, you know, notwithstanding Gene's legal advice, I think even if the council had a motion like this forwarded and it showed the intent of what the council's trying to do is you got to filter that out. These are the types of things that everyone would be on the hook for, and these are the types of things that the council would like to see remain as they are, where the individual is held accountable. So we would support the motion, and anything that could get kicked back to either enforcement committees or the AP or anybody to maybe make a list of, as Maggie was saying, but a list of things that you would not be held jointly liable. Maybe that's a simpler thing for, you know, from a legal standpoint. These are the types of things, and list, you know, a half dozen of the real critical ones that people have in the top of their heads that they don't want to be held accountable on a joint manner. Thank you.
Mr. Libby?
Gary Libby, Port Clyde. I would agree with this, I think, because this sets like a ground rule for what everyone's liable for. Not saying that sector rules wouldn't make them liable for further things. Maybe keep the separate from another motion, kind of like what Vito says, what the list stuff you're not liable for also, you know. But I think this is a good starting place to let people know what they're liable for and what they're not, because, you know, closed area infractions or whatever, if someone makes a mistake like that, that's to hold everyone in the sector liable for that would be, I think, a little excessive. But this stuff like this right here is what I always considered the violations that people would be liable for. So I'd support the motion. Thanks.
Thank you. Back to the council. Anything further from the council to include this as an option? Doug Grout.
So just a question for the Groundfish Committee and the people that supported this and wanted this in. They wanted the word only in there. So the way I take that, that means there's nothing else that sector could be held jointly liable for. Was that the intent? Or even if a sector wanted to hold, the way I interpret this is even if a sector wanted to write it into their plan, they couldn't. Is that what you wanted?
Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I like the intent of this motion, but I have a process question. I'm not sure whether or not we need to send it back to the AP and enforcement committee, and if for further development. If so, can we do that if we move it ahead, or would we be better off to table it to a time certain? I thought you said this was going to be this was going to be an easy one.
This was supposed to be an easy one, Terry. I guess that would depend on whether or not you think you had the votes to squash it, or if you want to make a motion to table. I mean,
strategy. I think it's a motion worth of full consideration. So I will make a motion to table this until after the AP and the committee has had a chance to further develop it.
Is there a second? Seconded by Doug. Point of order? Yeah. All those in favor of tabling? 6, 7. Let's do that again. Put your hands up if you're in favor. 8 opposed. Seven. Motion carries 8-7. What was the next easy one, Rip?
Well, we're on a roll here now, so. let's try an easy one. We're going to skip over the one that we had second to the one we had third. Again, a committee motion to recommend that the council revise the Groundfish PDT membership into compliance with the council policy limiting membership to technical personnel.
610 passed from the committee.
Discussion. Tom Neese.
Yeah, just really quickly. Amendment 13 added to the Groundfish PDT the advisory panel chair and one other person appointed by the executive director. Last November, the council voted to have to limit advisory, PDT membership to technical personnel, and at the time they said that we would incorporate this into Amendment 16, but we had never had a motion that actually did that, so that's what this does.
Discussion. Dana Rice.
The rationale, Mr. Chairman, I don't remember when we did this before. Could somebody explain to me why?
Why we did it as a policy? As the
I think the bottom line is because not all of industry folks can be represented on the PDT, and there's a feeling that there's an undue advantage if you have industry, you know, one or two industry. Do they accurately represent every different gear type? And the other point was that all the other PDTs are technical.
Further discussion? Maggie.
Thank you. As you said, Rip said the council voted on this in, or somebody said the council voted on this in November, but at that time you didn't take any public comment on it. So I'll use this opportunity to say I think that decision that you made then was a bad one, and I'd ask Tom Neese, if he'd be willing to repeat what he said at the committee meeting about how the PDT felt about the industry input on the committee. Thank you. On the PDT.
Anyone else? Is that you, Mr. Libby? You ought to just get some real estate up front here. Real close to the microphone.
Well, it was at the committee meeting in Peabody. It was tossed back and forth about some folks thought that having public input was beneficial. Others thought it bogged the meeting down, but I think more ideas come from public and public input would be important, and I don't see why they shouldn't be open meetings with a chance for public to speak. I would want it to say to include public comment, not to have it limited to only technical personnel. Thanks.
Rita.
Yeah, I think the PDT is a technical committee, and I can completely understand why having an audience with their hands up is going to really slow things down, what they need to do. That's not the kind of public input that we were talking about. I think it's a mistake also to not have industry expertise at the disposal of the technical team. They're not creating the plan. And if you look at the last few management actions that we've had, they've been quite hasty. What we have, look what we're doing now. You know, if we end up really pushing along Amendment 16 on time, we're going to have to defer to the PDT for an awful lot of work that would normally be done under the committee, and the committee would be deliberating over those things and getting technical backup from the PDT. Instead, the PDT, and I'm sure they're not thrilled about it, keeps getting tasked with developing full-blown plans sometimes from start to finish. And I think not having an industry expertise presence at those technical meetings is going to be a big mistake. And I don't know what the benefit is to eliminating that. it's not going to make the meeting be expedited any quicker, you know, and so this is not making a comment to say that this should be public comment and any of us should be able to go to a PDT meeting and participate. This is about you folks electing an industry person or persons to be there at the disposal of the technical team and to offer their expertise, which is not going to be on the PDT as it stands as a purely technical team.
Back to the council, anything? Anything further? Dr. Pierce, then Dave Gathel.
Yeah, I support the motion. It's consistent with council policy. In addition, I think relative to the plan development team getting information from the industry can be present at plan development team meetings. So obviously, it's a question of whether or not the chair of the plan development team will recognize someone in the audience who raises his hands. That's the way it is with plan development teams. If someone in the audience can offer some information that might assist the plan development team discussion, then that person can be recognized. Every plan development team chair has a way of doing business differently, I suppose. Tom has his own specific methods of running the plan development team. I won't repeat how he described the manner in which he runs the plan development team, but he's an open-minded guy, and I'm sure he would recognize anyone in the audience who might be able to assist the plan development team discussions. So I support the motion.
I mean, there's two competing interests here, basically. There's the interest of getting the job done and the interest of the industry in influencing getting the job done. And the problem from where I sit, having been on both sides of the fence here, is there is no one all-knowing guru that can represent all the gear types, all the different fishing styles in the industry. That's why there's a whole bunch of people on the council from different gear types and different ports. So whoever's there, even if it's subtle psychologically, they do have an edge. And I think it would be better, on balance, to vote for this and to have people, you know, if people want to sit in the audience and if the chair wants to recognize them, that's the business of the chair. But I don't think it's too easy to subtly influence the process if you're sitting at the table. So I'm going to support the motion.
Anything further from the council? You ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Fourteen opposed. Two. Motion carries 14-2. I think we're cooked. I think we're done.
1 out of 5 is not bad.
1 out of 5. Got another easy one?
Okay, well, let's try the fourth one that we had on there, John, which is the March. We've got the March 1 date in it. Again, a committee motion to recommend to the council to use the March 1, 2008 as the date for determining the vessels that the Option 5 PSC allocation provides. Essentially, this allows the sectors to set up their roster and determine what their potential sector contribution is as of that date. Tom?
Option PSC is potential sector contribution or permit history. We've got five options now. Option 5 is an option that has the two existing sectors still use the old Amendment 13 baseline that they were given for Georges Bank Cod. That's an option. As we discussed in April, for that option to work, you need to know who that applies to. And in April, we had used the date of April 30th. They suggested at the committee meeting, they being a representative of those sectors, came in and suggested using March 1st, 2008, which was the same sign-in date that everyone else had for sectors. So it makes it somewhat consistent with that, and that's what the committee is putting forward. All it does is whether you support that option or not is really decided later. All this does is tell us how we would determine who that option applies to, and that's the date that's used.
Discussion? Questions? The audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Fourteen. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries 14-0. That was an easy one. You got another one?
Okay. We'll go back.
There.
We'll go back to the third one that we had there. It's the one on discards. It's to recommend to the council that discards by non-sector vessels are accounted for in the same manner used for sector vessels when tracking ACLs. It came out of the committee unanimous decision.
Set us up, Tom.
I'll preface my comments with a caveat here is that this might change if we work on monitoring and reporting issues over the summer. But where it stands right now is that we had never before really talked about how we're going to account for discards and monitoring the ACLs during the season for the common pool vessels, whereas we had spent some time on how we're going to do that for the sector vessels. And if you recall, for the sector vessels, initially at least, what we're doing is until they can develop an accurate monitoring system, we're going to apply a discard rate to their landings, which is another motion you're not going to see today, but apply a discard rate to their landings that's coming out of something. And there's a couple options on how to calculate that discard rate. All this motion does, it's perhaps a little fuzzy, it would have been easier if we went through all of them. All this motion does is apply that same approach to the non-sector boats. So what that means is that when a sector boat comes in and does a landing, NIMS can apply a discard rate and get an estimate of what the total catch is. It's an attempt to facilitate the in-season monitoring of the discards. Now, as I mentioned, if we go towards a different reporting system that gets developed over the summer, this may ultimately have other options to it, but this is the one that we would be adopting right now.
Council? Audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. 2-2. Could stop right there. Yeah, they are going up. Onward, Rip.
The one just before that, Joan, to recommend to the council that sectors be prohibited from landing pout or windowpane flounder.
Tom?
If you recall, sectors don't get an allocation of or ace of pout, windowpane flounder, or Atlantic halibut for a variety of reasons, the big one being pout and windowpane are rarely landed, so there's really no basis on what to calculate their shares. And we had said a long time ago that in order to control mortality on those stocks, we'd apply some measures to the sector. Atlantic halibut has a one fish per trip, I think, bag limit. And so what this does is this just says, okay, you can't target pout or windowpane flounder to prevent the sectors from targeting it, something that they don't actually have an allocation for.
Council? Dave Gaethel.
I can understand the rationale if you could. Well, I guess you could target pout maybe somehow. But I mean, you catch window panes with yellowtails and blackbacks. They're in the same type of bottom. I just wonder if you wouldn't be better off with something like a low landing limit or something that would keep people from targeting them but wouldn't increase discards. I mean, this is going to turn it into a discard fishery. So I just throw that out there as a question more than anything else. I mean, to me, it seems like we're creating discards, and I thought the whole reason for this was to eliminate them.
Franklin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure that this is relevant anymore. Looking at the presentation this morning, the fishing mortality rate right now, we're about half of where we can be. So I think powder's changed greatly from when the committee looked at this. So I think this is something we should probably table until we know what's coming out of the GARM. So I would make a motion that we table this.
There's a second. Seconded by Sally. All those in favor? Unanimous, 14-0. Seems like the average is, what was that, like a ball? So, what do you think?
Some good news this morning. We got beans early this morning.
Yeah, big pelt fishery now.
Don't get him, guys. I do get harder from here.
I think this is a good place to stop, folks. See you at 8:30 in the morning.